Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering Kingston City Council's consultations with the Lodgepole Arts Alliance and what this could mean for the future of Lemoyne Point Farm.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. An Indigenous arts organization is looking to the future of Lemoyne Point Farm. After Kingston City Council finalized its $12 million purchase of the property at their last meeting, Lodgepole Arts Alliance, a national charitable nonprofit supporting Indigenous artists across the country, has been advocating for the protection of the site while also advancing a vision to transform it into a publicly accessible Indigenous-led cultural space. In 2024, the organization officially announced plans to establish a land-based studio complex for culture and creativity in the Kingston region. Executive Director Terry Lynn Brennan says that the vision was born out of a gap identified not only in Ontario, but across the country.
There really isn't a publicly accessible, Indigenous-owned, operated, programmed space that has been designed and built from the ground up that isn't on reserve land. As I said, there isn't a public space.
Brennan says the group identified Lemoyne Point Farm as an ideal fit for that vision.
It became a search for a place that would be encompassing of all the options that our ancestors used to engage in. So traditional agricultural food growth, water travel, hunting and forestry, initiation with old forests. Not that we would be hunting, but, just having those surroundings, those natural surroundings that our ancestors were used to. And when Lemoyne Point Farm came up, it just kind of ticked all the boxes that we had been in search for over 2 years for the perfect property. And ironically, that was one that really drew us in over 2 years ago. And we began conversations over 2 years ago to start to envision what this Indigenous art studio complex could be like, and specifically on that property.
Over the past 2 years, Lodgepole Arts has been in discussions with the city about potentially acquiring the land at cost, with a commitment to preserve and maintain it as a public space. Now, with the city's purchase complete, Brennan says they're optimistic those conversations will continue. She adds that early discussions with the city, community organizations, and local partners have been encouraging, with more engagement on the way.
And we feel that our objectives are very much aligned with everything that both the public and the private organizations surrounding the farm and its saving, preserving nature agree with. Our vision is very much to basically utilize the 12 current footprints of buildings on the property. We have no intention to expand those buildings, the footprint of those buildings, because we are a land-based artistic organization, so we want to preserve as much land as possible. But we will take those buildings and utilize them to the best of our ability through Indigenous engagement, through Indigenous contractors and engineers. We currently have created a project where we have hired two row consultants out of Six Nations to come to the community in early April, actually, and do some consultation, public consultation conversations on the vision of what Lodgepole's art space, arts studio complex could look like and should look like for this area. while keeping in mind the environmental needs and conditions of the landscape. And we will use Lemoyne Point Farm as our example of it when we get that property. I'm told to say when, not if. I'm told to say when, how that would look. We're hoping that it's a win-win-win for the community, for the council, and certainly for the regional Indigenous communities and Indigenous artists from across the country, to continue conversations, to continue with public consultations as well, to ensure that this type of space that we envision is one that's welcomed in the area, and one that the community can see to, as you know, and be proud of. And certainly bring more Indigenous artistry from all facets of the country to this current space of Gadda Rockway. It's a beautiful area, and so we're just very anticipatory to continue conversations with the city and council at this stage.
As part of the process, Lodgepole Arts is inviting the community to help shape this vision. A public talking circle will be held on Wednesday, April 8th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Memorial Hall in City Hall, with an earlier session from noon to 3 for Indigenous community members.
Two-row architects out of Six Nations will be leading that, a group that we are very excited to be working with, and hoping that they can help use their immense background and expertise in feasibility and looking at landscapes as potential building spaces to support you know, the conversations here in Kingston and also across the country with artists to envision what is most needed, most desired.
And ideas for the space are already beginning to take shape.
We're very excited about taking the barn, for instance, and transforming it into a modern theater in the round, as well as a gallery space, and taking, you know, any one of the other footprint buildings and turning it into a culinary studio, a dance studio, a weaving studio, a sculpting studio. We will also take care of the two historic buildings that are on the property, and try and keep them as rooted in their ancestral history as possible. They're beautiful limestone buildings, and knowing a little bit about that history is important to us as well. But we will also take the agricultural land that's owned that, and we would like to grow our own foodstuffs and recalibrate that soil and that need to replenish the earth. And we've talked to Highway 15 Gardens about helping to support some of those initiatives, because everybody's got their gifts, and we certainly want to try and work with all those that we know have those special gifts, not just artistry, but land, ecology, climate, the same with preserving the waterfront shoreline and honing that up. And then the old growth forest, we want to try and get rid of invasives and nurture the those trees that are in there that really have been lost across this part of the whole continent, really, and revitalize that old growth.
For now, while council stated at their last meeting that no decisions are being made in the near future, Lodgepole Arts is continuing to work towards their vision of an Indigenous arts and culture hub in Kingston.
It's such a positive step that we're at right now. And I'm trying to keep myself and everybody else calm, although I struggle with not getting too excited about the potential and the possibilities, not only for the community of Kingston, but for all of the Indigenous artists that I know across this country that are very excited about the potential of the Lodgepole vision coming to reality here in Gadda Rockway.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Now over to CFRC's Henry Walker with a story by Michelle Dory Forstell, LJR reporter for The Kingstonist, about a fall prevention program geared towards seniors in Lennox and Addington.
Thank you, Dinah. After months of uncertainty, and days after warning that federal changes could threaten its programs, the Kingston Native Center and Language Nest, KNCLN, says that funding has now been restored. The update follows a Friday, March 27, 2026 announcement from Indigenous Services Canada committing nearly $1.4 billion toward Indigenous health, wellness, and community supports, including renewed funding for the Urban Programming for Indigenous Peoples, UPIP, program, a key funding stream for organizations like KNCLN. According to a federal news release from Indigenous Services Canada, $168 million will be invested in UPIP over 5 years, with funding flowing through the National Association of Friendship Centres and the Ontario Federation of Indigenous Friendship Centres, OFIFC, to support local programming across the country. The Urban Programming for Indigenous Peoples, UPIP, is a federal program created in 2017 to fund services for Indigenous people living or accessing urban centres. It supports more than 100 organizations across Canada, including friendship centres, which provide cultural programming, health supports, and community services. In the latest federal announcement, Ottawa committed $168 million over 5 years to UPIP, with funding flowing through national and provincial friendship center organizations. For Kingston's Indigenous community, the announcement brings a measure of stability after months of being behind-the-scenes concern. "We heard about the cuts in November, and those cuts were serious," said KNCLN Executive Director Brandon Markle. Markle explained that the organization had spent months preparing contingency plans as it became clear funding could be significantly reduced, potentially dropping from roughly $300 million nationally to about $27 million. "That's just an insane number," he said. While KNCLN has been able to ensure staff jobs would not be immediately affected, the uncertainty still weighed heavy on both employees and the community. "It didn't stop the worries for the team and for the community," Markle said, adding that programs would have had to scale back and slow down if cuts had gone ahead. Earlier, concerns were that changes to the federal program could reduce or disrupt services delivered by KNCLN, which provides cultural programming, language revitalization, and community supports to urban Indigenous residents in Kingston. That uncertainty appears to have been tied to a broader federal shift in how services are delivered, one that is now being clarified through the new funding commitment. In its announcement, Indigenous Services Canada said the investment supports the transfer of service delivery to Indigenous organizations, positioning friendship centres as central to delivering culturally grounded services in urban communities. While the announcement resolves immediate concerns for friendship centres like KNCLN, it does not fully restore the broader funding landscape, leaving some organizations without support under the new model. The new commitment provides $168 million over 5 years, roughly $33.6 million annually, in addition to existing base funding of about $27.5 million per year. For friendship centers, that translates into renewed stability and the ability to continue programming. "It gives us the ability to prepare, to work, to have some stability," Markle said. Programs at KNCLN are now expected to continue as planned. "We'll return to business as usual as if nothing ever happened," he said. But Markle pointed out that the picture is more complicated at a system level. "My heart is with those organizations that have lost out," he said. Under the restructured model, funding is now being more concentrated within the Friendship Net Center network, flowing through national and provincial organizations rather than being distributed across a wider range of service providers. "That shift means some organizations that previously received funding may no longer be supported." The federal government has framed the changes as part of a broader transition toward Indigenous-led service delivery, a goal widely supported across the sector. But Markle said the transition has also exposed how vulnerable frontline services can be when funding certainty is unclear. "You always hear rumors, and you wonder what's going on behind the curtain," he said. The timing of the announcement has also raised questions, within organizations sounding the alarm about potential cuts just days before the federal government confirmed a multi-year commitment. For organizations like KNCLN, that uncertainty translated into months of contingency planning, internal restructuring, and difficult conversations about what services could be sustained. We did a lot of work to ensure that our team would be taken care of, Markle said. Still, he said, even careful planning could not fully offset the anxiety created by the prospect of major funding reductions. The 5-year funding commitment is being welcomed by sector leaders as a step toward long-term stability. Stability in funding means stability in people's lives, said Armand Jourdan Sr., president of the OFIFC, in a statement accompanying the announcement. The funding will support friendship centers serving more than 1 million Indigenous people in urban areas each year, including youth, seniors, and those facing housing, health, or social challenges. For Markle, the restored funding offers both relief and a renewed sense of responsibility. Friendship centers, he said, are uniquely positioned to support Indigenous people navigating urban environments and may now also play a larger role in supporting organizations that have lost funding. How can friendship centers support those other organizations? He said, describing it as a new question for the sector. At the same time, the longer-term outlook remains uncertain. As an organization rooted in Indigenous ways, we're always thinking to the seventh generation, Markle said. This 5-year commitment will certainly benefit the seventh generation, but what comes next? For now, however, the focus is on moving forward. With funding secured, KNCLN will continue delivering the programs and services that many in Kingston's urban Indigenous community rely on every day, even as broader questions about funding equity and long-term sustainability remain unsolved.
Thank you, Henry, and thank you to Michelle Dory Forrestel of The Kingstonist for that story. Coming up, we have a story by Ted Evans from CJAI Amherst Island Radio that covers the approval of additional funding for the W.J. Henderson Community Center Renewal Project.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
Loyalist Township Council approved additional funding to complete the construction of the W.J. Henderson Community Center Renewal Project. Staff's report presented an updated business case for the construction and operation of the center. The report reflected a variance of over $500,000 since staff's first estimates were presented to council in November 2023. Engineering and environment manager with the township, Luke McDonald, talks about the original business case staff presented in 2023.
Back in November 2023, staff brought forward the validation report, which outlined the scope of the WJ project, as well as the business case, which presented the financing and operational costs for the project and future operations of the facility. Included in that business case were a number of assumptions made about both expenses that would be incurred as well as funding that would be secured or not.
Treasurer and Director of Finance with the Township, David Clazy, breaks down the remaining costs and how it may affect the Township's tax rate in the future.
Since the validation report was done, Council's received the Township's asset management plan. The revised amount for yearly amount or impact to the operating budget is $737,000. The good news is that of that $737,000, we actually built in $479,000 of that in the 2026 operating budget. So we started to build in some of the amount for the debt repayment. And we also built in a fair-sized chunk of the staffing costs because we've already budgeted for at least a half a year of operations for the facility. So there is a significant portion of that already built in. In addition, we'll have the $180,000 of revenue on top of that coming in for the sponsorship revenue. So that really only leaves about $78,000, $79,000 left to build in. They're potentially built into the tax rate in 27, which results in about a third of a percent tax increase.
Manager of Recreation, Parks and Facilities with the Township, Matthew Sobalski, explains one of the larger variances in the report.
Total staffing is projected in the revised report for 2027 compared to the previous report, outlining an increase to our staffing model at $535,000. Where that increase does show up is $12,000 for our administrative capacities and areas, versus 2026 validation. For arena capacities and areas, there is a variance or an increase of $223,000 versus 2026 validation. And in our aquatics, we do have a variance of $299,000 for current projections versus validation.
Cebulski went on to detail new staffing requirements in the Aquatic Center.
Aquatics does drive most of this variance. So our updated 2027 operating model does reflect some staffing needs that are required to safely run a two-pool aquatic center. Majority of these needs are based in lifeguard and instructor coverage, supervision across two pools for simultaneous programs, as well as operational backfill for training and stat holiday dates.
McDonald speaks about one of the positive variances in the report.
The Community Sport and Recreation Infrastructure Fund provided by the Province of Ontario was not initially projected in the original validation report, but the staff has secured the approximately $9.2 million that is included there. So obviously that's a large change for the better to the township. So that was excellent news.
McDonald noted the future of the center.
At the end of the day, the facility is going to be a beautiful facility. I think everyone is very proud of what's being done, and it should be reflected in the final project outcomes.
Councillor Paul Broderick spoke about the importance of the variances.
We've all had housework done and you find the surprise behind the drywall. And when you do a project like this, it's a little bigger than a little surprise behind the drywall, but I know staff work to keep that as low as possible.
Councillor Mike Buderick showed his support for the project.
Traveling around to different communities to see facilities that other municipalities have, this is one to be proud of considering its age and the work that has gone into it to keep it what it is.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn spoke about the future of the W.J. Henderson Community Center.
We are taking on a significant project for a township this size. We are succeeding. We have run into a few extras, but we're going to complete it. We're going to be able to enjoy it. And I'm thankful that the next generation will be able to enjoy it just like we have when our forefathers originally built the project.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Up next, Jesse Bell is reading a story by Sarah Williams, LGI reporter for the Napanee Beaver, about a charity truck pull organized by Greater Napanee Connects.
Thank you, Dinah. In their first year, Greater Napanee Connect has already successfully hosted a handful of community events. From guitars and cars to the infamous fire truck pull, GNC has arguably strengthened the ties that bind this community together. GNC is a volunteer-driven, community enrichment organization dedicated to strengthening community through connection, collaboration, and civic pride. Their events are community-led, and profits are used to benefit the people who live there. For example, the proceeds from the 2025 fire truck pull helped create the new Veterans Crosswalk at the corner of John and Mill Street. With a mission to bring people together, planning is well underway for a spate of events spanning the next several months. Pulling together, the aptly named Fire Truck Pull kicks off events on June 20th at the Best and Bash Arena. Speaking with organizer Tiffany Lloyd, she describes several differences from last year's event. Lloyd explained that teams are comprised of a maximum of 12 people, each with a $25 registration fee. $150 from each team will go toward GNC to help support events, while another $150 will go toward the Best Team bonus. The best team is decided by a panel of judges and is based on pull time, money raised, and team spirit. Quote, each team also picks a cause, and every penny beyond the entry fee will go right back to the cause of choice, Lloyd explained. She expanded, every donation attached to a teammate will count toward their team's cause. In other words, if teams can raise $3,000, for example, apart from the administrative fees and bonus, the excess money will go toward whatever cause the team feels strongly about. Local businesses, organizations, service clubs, sports teams, and groups of friends are invited to register, with online registration available through the GNC website. Unlike last year, pulling together will take place later in the season. Guitars and Cars will also be returning on September 26th. In 2025, this event was resurrected for the first time since the pre-pandemic era and was wildly popular, drawing nearly 5,000 people to Napanee's downtown core. Overall, Lloyd described the community feedback as incredible. With palpable excitement, Lloyd teased an event that is still in the planning stage. In the interim, GNC is always looking for more volunteers. More information about GNC and their many events can be found on their website. Thank you to Sarah Williams for that story. Coming up next, we have Dinah Jansen reading a story by Keith Dempsey, local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, that provides an update on the future of the Seelies Bay Community Hall.
Thank you, Jesse. A final decision on the future of the Seelies Bay Community Hall has been put on hold as Council opts to take a broader look at how the space can best serve the community in the longer term. At its Tuesday, April 7th meeting, the Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands Council unanimously voted to reject the proposed design options and instead send the matter back to staff for further consultation and analysis. Ward 2 Councillor Angela Kelman said the move reflects growing concern that Council did not yet have the information needed to make an informed decision on the future of the former Firehall site. The decision follows an influx of public feedback, with residents offering a wide range of ideas for the space during recent consultations and a town hall style session. Suggestions included creating a multi-use community hub featuring a library, cafe, and post office, alongside services such as a daycare, youth programming, and a farmer's market. Other proposals pointed to arts and culture uses, including studio space, classes, and live music, as well as recreational options like pickleball, movie nights, and indoor activities. Broader concepts such as emergency housing, a senior center, and year-round public washrooms were also raised, highlighting the community's desire for a flexible, multi-purpose facility. Layered into these discussions is a significant proposal by Dr. Emily Connor and Dr. Debbie Briggs, who presented a vision to relocate the Seelies Bay Medical Center into the Fire Hall. Their proposal centers on improving long-term healthcare stability in the community with a focus on recruitment, sustainability, accessibility, and overall quality of care. The physicians told Council that attracting new doctors to the area has been a persistent challenge despite municipal initiatives, largely due to financial uncertainty tied to commercial leasing. Rising and unpredictable overhead costs, combined with significant debt carried by new graduates, have made smaller rural practices less attractive. They argue that relocating to a municipally supported space could provide greater financial stability and help recruit and retain healthcare providers. The proposal also emphasizes the importance of sustainability through shared services and collaboration, as well as improving accessibility. The current clinic faces limitations, including small exam rooms and barriers for patients with mobility challenges, issues that could be addressed through a redesigned facility. With additional space, the doctors say the clinic could expand to include team-based care, bringing in nurses and allied health professionals, and potentially increase patient capacity at a time when access to primary care remains a growing concern. Council's motion directs staff to consult further with both the medical center and the local library to understand their needs better and explore options that could support both services within the community. A report with recommendations is expected to be brought forward at a future date. For now, council members say the pause reflects a desire to get the discussion right while balancing community space needs with the long-term sustainability of essential services in Seelies Bay. And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. And now back over to Jesse Bell with CFRC's Sports Update.
Thank you, Dinah. The Queen's Gales women's football team participated in the Intercollegiate Flag Football Provincial Finals last weekend. The Gales entered the tournament as the top-ranked team in the 11-on-11 format after sweeping the regional qualifying tournament 3 weeks prior. The undefeated Gales rolled into Fleming College looking to win the first provincial championship in program history. Though women's football had existed as a concept at Queen's University for over a decade, it did not receive official club status until 2021, with their first official season taking place in 2022. The team would medal in both 2024 and 2025, building a solid foundation of young players and veterans alike. 2026 marked the breakthrough season for the program, with convincing tournament wins in February and March earning them a top spot in the Football Ontario Provincial Championships in the Tier 1 division. Queens would meet the Western Mustangs in the provincial final, a rematch of March's regional tournament final. The Gales defense, led by fourth-year Claire Chow, would smother Western's passing game, while the Queens quarterback Elizabeth Shee would throw three touchdowns to power the Gales to a commanding 27-0 victory and the first provincial title in program history. The Gaels will advance to the Football Canada National Finals in Regina. The National Finals begin May 1st, and the team is looking to raise funds to help offset travel costs. For more information, you can visit their social media page at QueensWFootball on Instagram. In other sports news, two members of the Queens women's rugby team have been selected to the Canadian national team. Lizzie Gibson and Chloe Daniels will join two other Queens alumnus in Taylor Perry and Sophie DeGoody on the roster for the Pacific Four Series. Lizzie Gibson finished her Queens career as the program's all-time leading scorer with 569 career points, breaking the record formerly held by her teammate, Sophie DeGoody. Chloe Daniels played a key role in Canada's silver medal performance at the 2024 Paris Summer Olympics and won a number of team and conference awards over the course of her accomplished and decorated Queen's career.
And thank you to Jesse Bell for that update. And also thank you to our sponsor. Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn more about Kim and local listings for your new home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up, we have the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Wednesday, April 15th, daytime high of 13 degrees with a 65% chance of precipitation. That rain remains steady heading into Thursday, April 16th, daytime high of 15 degrees but a 91% chance of rain in the forecast. Friday, April 17th marks the end of a very rainy week here in the city of Kingston. Daytime high of 15 degrees with cloud and sunshine giving way in the afternoon, and then we get a beautiful day Saturday, April 18th, nicest day of the year so far. 20 degrees is your high with a mix of sun and cloud. We will see rain back in the forecast on Sunday, April 19th. 14 degrees is your high temperature with a 70% chance of precipitation, and that will cool things off starting the next week as Monday, April 20th, a high of just 7, feeling closer to 4. But we will reach double digits again on Tuesday, April 21st, and that should remain steady throughout the rest of next week as well.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.